coming to you live from inside the globe, perched high atop the Bugle Planet building in sunny Gotham City. It's Hey Kids Comics with two guys who are always ready to seduce the innocent, your hosts, Andrew Farmer and the Jedi Cole Houston. And now it's time for Hey Kids Comics.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Hey Kids Comics. I'm Andrew Farmer, and with me, as always, the Jedi.
I am Cole Houston.
Oh, yes. Whoa, there he is.
Oh, yeah, God. Jump in.
Scared me. It's like, I know we're like a month away there. From Halloween, but God. Warning when you walk into the room. Man, horrifying. Hi, Cole.
Listen to the children of the morning.
So what beautiful
music. Sam Guthrie of the New Mutants taught us are pigs. Pigs are the children of the morning.
I don't like that.
You don't have to like it, but that's the way it is.
Also, don't.
Just call them children of the morning.
This show is over. I'm putting a stop to this now. This is not okay. Oh, my God.
That's the sweet music they make. All right, yeah, let's get going here.
We have been talking about families for the past three issues of Hey Kids Comics.
I just got back from visiting my family, so this is rather, not that you would know, but...
Are there any, tech magnates in your family that are secretly trying to create spider bots that are trying to kill you while hanging out?
I have encouraged everyone...
Just a little excitement. That's all you're asking for.
That's right.
Just a little less talk and a lot more action. That's all. Oh, God. So what are we talking about? Where have we been, Cole? What are we doing here? What's going on?
Well, this is the penultimate chapter.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to be a bit of a pedant here. Of family reunions.
Yes.
This is chapter 4, Along Came a Spider.
That's right. And we've done the Fantastic Four, we've done Batman, and we've done, it's right on the tip of my tongue. Why can't I? Superman. Of course we've done Superman. The interesting thing about, I think the thing that separates as we get into Spider-Man and the Spider family is, when we look at a Batman, we look at a man who's seeking family. Gone out after family by any means necessary and created a family / army, what one would consider a weird doomsday militia family on a TLC reality TV show to fight his secret war. The Fantastic Four, I think, is just, you know, not only did they create a family, they also created a system in which to foster geniuses into not becoming the next Dr. Doom, even though Dr. Doom is involved in...
they can't help but have his involvement. He, drops by unexpectedly.
Crazy uncle, man.
He's like, who's it, Randy Quaid? Villains.
He's Uncle Eddie of the Super... Yeah. Merry Christmas, shitters full. Of devil magic in my face to look at it.
They go visit in Latveria, and he's there with his big Latverian-ness mobile home.
And in the last issue, I think we did a pretty good job of insinuating that Superman insinuates himself
into every
family unit.
He is just such so desperate for family.
That he finds them everywhere, even if he has to travel.
He's on a constant... lookout for more family.
But Spider-Man's interesting because I think
he's a family hoarder.
that's not the whole word I thought you were going to use, but I like it better.
Oh,
it's more PG.
Yeah, now that I think about it worked out.
Spider-Man's different because I think family seeks Spider-Man. I think he's the, whereas everybody else is seeking that stability. You know, I think Spider-Man is the stability. I think Peter Parker is the stability that everybody else seeks. I think it's
he sort of becomes the family magnet.
Yeah, the linchpin. And so all these different, you know, families kind of gravitate towards him, all these different aspects of family. But, you know, much like everyone else, it starts with a family. And I think that the story of the core, what we consider the core Spider-Man family, is the story of Marvel. And I don't want to get too Civil War letter home with this. You know, I don't.
My dearest Abigail.
That's right.
Yet again, we find ourselves in the midst of battle.
So easy for you to slip into Garrison Keillor. It's amazing.
My thoughts come to you. Billy from town took a musket ball to the eye.
Oh, God. Oh, God, this got dark.
Damn, Garrison.
Whoa, Garrison.
Stop it, Garrison. Cut that out.
Rein it in, buddy. Yeah. But
like, no. Batman comes along. It's the Civil War.
It's the Civil War.
It's the Civil War. Of course it's dark.
But
why wouldn't it be?
Spider-Man has this thing where the story of the birth of Spider-Man and the family surrounding Spider-Man is the story of Marvel, because this is where we get the kind of byline, I guess, the pull line, the pull quote for every Marvel book since has been, with great power comes with great responsibility. And that's,
you know, the thing about it is that is a term that had been bandied around as far as I knew. I thought that, like, Pliny the Elder came up with that.
It was Abraham Lincoln's lesser known quote.
Yeah, it was like all, there were tens of billions of people it could have been.
Right.
And then somebody quotes that to Stan Lee and, like, oh, yeah, great. Yeah, he used that.
Hey, Al Gore invented the internet and Stan Lee invented
with great power. I see Stan Lee talking about it. He's like, yeah, I don't even know what it means. I just said it in a Spider-Man book. And all of a sudden, everybody's running with it. I feel like Robert Crumb about Keep on Trucking. I don't care.
It's referring to cooking in a microwave at different elevations.
That's right.
You gotta watch the popcorn when you're in Utah versus watching the popcorn you're in Arkansas.
When you're above the timberline, it's an entirely different.
What if he did? God, that would be so great if he just stood up at a convention and just dropped that bomb. Just to really, what?
Missed everything you ever thought.
Like, you take him off the circuit. He can't talk in conventions anymore. I just tell the truth to power.
That's
350
right.
watts.
Me and this guy that looked a lot like Jack killed the original Jack Kirby because he wouldn't do what I wanted. What's the Beatles? You can't know.
I had just left the planning session for Doctor Strange.
Right.
Steve Ditko was there and he said, no, we're going to put him in the gloves. And then I left and I went to a bodega and I just wanted a little juicy, you know, the little barrels of the red or the blue. And there was a guy in there from behind. He had the same kind of bald, male pattern baldness and the same build as Steve Ditko. And I grabbed
like that you happen to smoke cigars.
I grabbed a kebab from off of the 24-hour rotating kebab stand and just jammed into his neck 35 times, and he died. And that's how I came up with the idea for the Punisher. It's just like, what?
Stan!
What if Stan Lee was a serial killer, but he only killed people that looked like people from the bullpen bulletin that had gone against him in an editorial way. Jesus, that's brilliant.
Poor little bastard. It's not his fault he looked like Jack. But it wasn't the last. What? No, it wasn't the last. How many people look like Jack Kirby? Oh, you know, back in the 50s, Upper East Side was swarming with Kirby lookalikes. Let's say I called the herd.
I injected hydrochloric acid into a jeans model because he looked like Rob Liefeld.
Oh, this got dark. You thought my Civil War was dark.
All right, Spider-Man. We were talking about Spider-Man.
Yeah, we came here to talk about Spider-Man and the Spider-Man family.
And this is what we get for all of our best laid plans of mice and men get hydrochloric acid injected in them.
Jeans model.
Just a jeans model. I love that idea. Just random jeans model.
You know, the fashion district is swarming with those.
Oh, sure. Just jean models for days. So anyway, Uncle Ben and Aunt May. Let's just start there.
Let's break this down, because you have Peter Parker starting out in the narrative of Peter Parker / Spider-Man as an orphan being adopted by elderly relatives.
Right.
Who had, at that age that they were, 15, 16 years earlier, had no business adopting a child.
Sure. Didn't have a choice. I don't feel like they felt they had a choice. I think that was the... And it was, for the time period, you kind of... I don't want to say that that's what was happening. You didn't have that happening, but it made sense.
Yeah, and then they retrofit it later, where it was like he's riding along with Ben, and he's like, I'm the goddamn Uncle Ben! Oh, wait.
Eat my rice, you son of a bitch! What? Yeah, well, you knew we weren't going to get 5 minutes into the actual content without an Uncle Ben rice joke.
It had to be my head.
Come on.
Like that brilliant video of Spider-Man grocery shopping.
That's right. So, yeah, you were right. But you weren't wrong. Because, you know, at some point, and I think a lot of it had to do with the Tobey Maguire films, was that he was on site when Uncle Ben was gunned down. Because, you know, and I think that was, it was done for effect, obviously, but that wasn't the case at the beginning. I don't think he was necessarily there. It's just Uncle Ben, you know, was a major influence. Uncle Ben died, and we were talking before the show that of all of the comic book deaths, Uncle Ben's might have been one of the only ones to actually stick, especially for as long as he's been dead.
Well, the thing about it is, there is, you know, this has kind of been leaked at Marvel, Spider-Ben. Spider-Ben is on the way. He wears a spider pattern sweater.
No mask.
Yeah, no mask. He doesn't need one. And he, and basically the sweater itself is spider web. I mean, it's like Spidey's web fluid.
Oh, he spins it up unravels. Every time? Or...
Yeah, it unravels itself, and he can swing from, like, you know, very low-hanging light poles. Because
real
he can
low.
Break his hip. Yeah,
I mean, it's basically leaning at that point. It's not...
Just, like, casually walking. It just it's like having a walker above instead of below.
Having a walker above instead of below.
It happens more often than you realize. So, you know, scoff while you may, but, you know, it's the next inevitable phase.
Right. Make hay while the sun shines, but when it goes down, you're going to need that walker from above.
That's what I'm taking to Shark Tank.
That's good. Shark Tank. All right. So, Uncle Ben. What was the importance of Uncle Ben's role, I guess, in the family, when we're speaking of family in Spider-Man?
I think, like you say, Uncle Ben becomes this, I don't know what age Peter was adopted, but he's pretty much been the father figure in Peter's life for the better part of his life.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, taking on a role that presumably, as far as I know, they never had any kids. They had, like, zero experience going into this, but you know, they're very good people, the Parkers, and they take on this child and start to raise him. They take on their nephew, and Ben as that influence, basically it's almost like Jor-El.
Okay.
In that, bear with me,
I'm going down this road. I'm with you. Let's hear it.
His words, his influence, him being part of Spider-Man ultimately echoes through the years.
Sure.
And, you know, his dying words or something that he imparted in passing before he died, depending on which version we're talking about, become sort of the mantra of the Spider-Man.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. Okay, I'm with you. The Jacob Marley effect of hearing, you know, of living with the idea of great power requiring great responsibility.
And he's driven by this sense of guilt, in many ways in a much stronger way than Batman.
Yeah.
Because unlike Batman, young Bruce Wayne couldn't have done a thing but get himself killed.
Sure. Yeah.
That he wasn't murdered in cold blood along with his parents is nothing short of a miracle.
Well, he didn't have that sweet pearl necklace on that later could be perfectly timed in slow motion to...
Yeah, the coveted fake pearls, as Catherine pointed out quite rightly, that real pearls are actually individually knotted between each pearl on the string.
Yeah, they wouldn't go flying off into the street.
Yeah, so you can tell she was wearing her costume jewelry, so... You know, it seems rather poignant, but it's also rather revealing.
But it's also a slap in the face to the guy that was hired to murder the Waynes, because he didn't get them real jewels in his face, dummy.
Yep.
All right. So, yes. Yeah, I
so
agree
in grabbing
pearl
necklaces, if you get the whole thing, you know you got the real McCoy. That's all I'm saying. That's our life hack.
That's our life hack. when killing billionaires in the street after seeing Zorro,
and grabbing your necklace, this is how to know if you got, was it real or was it just costume jewelry?
Right, you got to check first.
A lot of budding necklace snatchers are getting a little insight there.
I know it feels like. You know, an extra step that takes a little more time when you're trying to rip the jewelry off of a meek stole wearing heiress to a fortune. But slow down. That's what I'm going to say. Take a beat. Really check it out first. Might not be worth your while.
Yeah, it's like the song says, slow down. You're moving too fast. You got to make this burglary or this robbery last now.
Now.
So you don't have pearls on the cobblestones. And shooting billionaires.
Okay, all right. So,
but
yes.
Again, we're getting further and further away from Spider-Man.
I don't care.
Yeah, but Ben becomes the sort of absentee moral compass.
Yeah,
that remains.
That.
He becomes very much a part of Peter Parker for his entire career, and in many ways, both through his words and through his death becomes the catalyst of Spider-Man, because now Spider-Man and the Punisher have more in common than you realize, because they're both trying to right a wrong.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter that you aren't the ad hoc Joe Chill, you know, you aren't the one who did it, but if you're doing anything, then at least maybe somehow I can make up for this loss. I can shoulder this loss a little better.
But I think the difference, I think that while you're absolutely correct, right? I think there's a lot more in common there than gets credit. I think the difference is that Spider-Man is functioning under the moral compass of I don't want, if I have it in my ability as taught, I think maybe if Punisher had an Uncle Ben, this might be a different conversation, because what Spider-Man is essentially saying is I don't want anybody to be affected by a loss the way that I was if I can stop it from happening. So if I have to spend all night, you know, zip tying criminals with my organic zip ties to a light post, depending on what continuity we're in, I'll do it. Whereas Punisher's basically saying, I don't care about anything else besides my revenge. This is not justice.
His is more selfish.
Yeah, yeah.
Approach, because this is justifying his actions through the, you know, the vehicle of revenge, and it's just there's never enough revenge.
Yeah, it's a real short issue in this story arc to do a Punisher. It's family issue.
Yeah, you've got Punisher and Micro and that Hunchback. No, that's Batman.
That's Batman. Yeah, it's just basically Punisher and then also Punisher because it's the Punisher. He doesn't really trust anyone. All right, so let's talk a little bit about Aunt May at this point, because I think as influential as Ben was on on Spider-Man posthumously, I think Aunt May has shouldered that burden for 60 years.
Yeah, she's the prehumous moral compass.
Right. She's the daily reminder. She's the vision board that Spider-Man has to look at. And I thought it was really interesting, and I guess it never dawned on me when I was doing the research for this, that Spider-Man never told her that he was Spider-Man, not necessarily to protect her from Goblin or Chameleon or whatever, but I think for him it was more, he was afraid she was going to kick off from the shock of finding out her nephew was Spider-Man.
Or, being a very moral person, you know, have no choice but to turn him in.
Sure, sure.
Because she, you know, she gobbles up. The Daily Planet was Fox News before Fox News for the elderly in comics.
Oh, hot takes, ladies and gentlemen. We try to keep our politics out of the show, but hot takes.
You know, when you go to my dad's house, we want four televisions simultaneously.
Yeah, I'm with you. No, you're absolutely right. And she's, the thing about Aunt May is, let's look at this honestly. Do you think that Aunt May didn't know that Peter Parker was Spider-Man? Like, let's be real.
I think she thought he was on the marijuana. I think she thought he was rocking the ganj or, you know, doing whatever the kids were doing.
You're telling me that she didn't at one point catch him on the ceiling? That's some Peter Blatley marijuana. That's what that is. That's not... That's some exorcism weed.
Well, you know, at that point, who knew what was on the street? I mean, look at Cloak and Dagger, for God's sake.
Right, look at City of Ice. Look at Cap getting all methed up.
Yeah, look at, like, you know, stuff that turns you into multi-armed man or multi-armed man spider or...
Whatever.
Cat Wolf. I mean, yeah, Cat I mean...
Wolf. Easy killer. Dangerous territory.
Yeah, the strange case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde got nothing on the Marvel Universe. Everybody's drinking some shit that turns them into God knows what.
That's true. You make a valid assessment.
So if she came in, he's on the ceiling, you know, all he has to do is do a little quick drop, and she's saying, oh, he's on the super marijuana.
Oh, my God. Yeah, but she's super dealt with...
marijuana.
She's dealt with a great deal of of hardship, and it leads to a really great dynamic. Like, it leads to a very interesting, awesome dynamic in Spider-Man's world where she's the mother, and like Batman has an Alfred, you know, Superman has a Martha, I guess.
Yeah.
And this is straight up like all of the familial relations are now loaded onto Aunt May's shoulders to deal with. That's just kind of her role now.
Well, you also have to look at it from the standpoint of, as a widow, when Ben dies, Peter is still a minor.
That's true.
And she is solely responsible for, you know, she's suffered. She has to shoulder the loss of her husband of however many decades and still be stoic enough to help shepherd Peter through his final formative years.
Yeah.
And if you look at it from that standpoint, she's probably one of the strongest characters in the Marvel Universe.
I like that. I agree. Yeah.
Because she's put, you know, she put a brave face on a lot of stuff that you don't think about until you do like me and overanalyze everything. In fact, we do have an issue of this show called titled Overthinking Comics.
Yeah.
Because that is one thing we constantly do only too well. Yes.
Constantly.
So we're going to sort of shine the spotlight on ourselves a bit and look at ourselves and wonder what the hell we're doing.
Yeah. But, yeah. Okay, so yes, Aunt May, very formative. You know, so formative and so well-defined. I really don't think she needs much more time.
No, not really. She's becomes the constant in Peter's life.
Yes. Yeah, she is the anchor point. She's the fixed time and space in Peter's life. There's never a time in which as long as you're not looking at one day more, which we won't, we don't.
No, that doesn't not, happen.
That doesn't happen on this show. So any of you out there going, well, you know, there was that you can
technically one day more. No, it didn't.
No,
it
did nothing. Did not in our world. Sorry.
It is spider bone claws. Go away.
It's the spider bone claws. Nice. I like it. Yeah, but
Peter, that's what we have on the show is the bone claws. C-L-A-U-S-E.
Peter has parents.
Yeah.
Peter has parents. And Peter's parents were untouched for a very long time. We didn't discuss
it was sort of
parents.
Open season because nothing, you just assumed they were dead.
Yeah, they were just dead.
There's normal people who had a normal child who and were normal dead.
Until they weren't. Until, do you remember the negative ones, the minus one issues?
Oh, yes. Is that where this came from?
That's where this started. The minus one, the untold tales, and I have it somewhere in one of these here long boxes. The minus one of the Spider-Man was a tale of Spider-Man's parents, and it was essentially Dad was an OSS agent that got, or no. Dad was a special forces guy that got recruited by Nick Fury into the CIA. Mom was a daughter of an OSS agent that was like a code breaker and was then put. She became a member of the CIA to go on to help out, like sort of on, you know, you've got your Scully and your Mulders, where you got your ass kicker and your thinker, you know, that's sort of the idea. And they went on a secret mission and got offed by who was it? God, it's crazy. It's a crazy story.
Well, it's kind of like it's actually one of those things where a retcon is at least feasible. It's like this character Catherine and I started watching the Jack Ryan, and there was a, you know, deep cover operative in the Middle East. He's like telling you to be careful with your gun. I don't want to get shot in the ass because my kids think I'm an astronaut, and I can't explain how I got shot in space.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you're deep cover anything and you have a family that you can't divulge anything you're up to, you have to have, you know, as far as Peter knew, his mom and dad must have worked a lot. Because the cat's in the cradle in the silver spoon.
God damn it, Harry Chapin. That's the one thing I wish that we kept the – because it was the Andrew Garfield Spider-Man movies, if I remember right, that were going to really bring that into the fold. Because in the comics, once this cat was out of the proverbial bag, they've kind of now run it to ground.
Okay.
And really kind of explored it. There was they were agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but then, you know, they were taken. Their whole thing ended up being to free X-Man. Do you remember old X-Man?
I think I remember X-Man.
X-Man, who I think was Cable, but a different Cable that came from, you know, a Nathan Morningstar version of Cable and not but who was being held captive by none other than Baron Wolfgang von Strucker. So von Strucker played into it. Like, they were, like, full-on, like, S.H.I.E.L.D. agents that I really kind of wish we would have gotten some backstory on, but also it kind of sullies the Spider-Man waters a little bit. Like, you don't need to have cool parents.
Yes, exactly.
Like, what's the point of you guys giving Spider-Man cool parents?
Why do they need to be after all this time?
Right. They don't need to be cool parents. They could have just been parents that died in a car accident that wasn't, you know, was nobody's fault and just happened to, you know, we just.
Well, in many ways, it robs him of the normalcy of the, you know, the idea behind Spider-Man is he could be you.
Yeah.
You know, sorry about your folks, but still, it could be you. And that takes it out of that and makes it fantastic, because no one can be fantastic without some sort of fantastic backstory. And it's like, no, it's okay to be normal.
Right, right. And also,
give the character permission to be normal.
I think that Spider-Man's interesting because while he was robbed of family, he was never robbed of family. You know,
yeah.
When we look at Batman was robbed of family. You know, Batman didn't really have any close relatives outside of Pennyworth that were going to take care of him. You know, the Canes are the Canes, and they were never, you know, you had a kind of austere family relations with, you know, the waspy super rich idea of family. But Spider-Man was robbed of that traditional Rockwellian family without ever being robbed of family. And
yes,
I think
exactly.
It led to an interesting dynamic where he didn't have to pull a Batman and create a family, but he still longed for that family unit. So whenever the opportunity arose for him to have a family, that family would then in turn, it was playing hard to get, that family would gravitate towards him. And I will get into that more later with your Spider-Verse and your random dimensional brothers and sisters that would show up out of nowhere. Just, hey, I'm here. You know, can I crash on your couch? I'm your long lost cousin. 23andMe said we both had spider DNA, so I'm here.
23.
But let's touch ever so briefly on Mary Jane and Gwen, because I think that they're integral to the spider.
Well, your love interests become sort of part of the family in a sense. So it's very important to explore that dynamic because, you know, frankly, you start out and Peter hits the jackpot.
And interestingly enough, we were talking about this before the show, much like we did with the Batman, you know, I do a little research, much like we did with Batman villains, where it was Veidt, you know, the man who laughs was the Joker, and we look for influences. And Margaret was the influence for Mary Jane.
And I never really would have made that connection.
Never would have put it together. But now that you say it, I'll never unsee it. Okay, so continue. Yes, he hit the jackpot right away.
So, yes, you get this character that becomes the enduring love interest that for the better part of the Spider-Man mythos, at some point, Gwen Stacy comes in like so much Betty and Veronica. But, you know, you start out with Mary Jane, Mary Jane Watson, rather. And, you know, she is a major part. Major influence on him, because now all of a sudden, you know, you have to start. I think, I don't know if this happened in the comics per se, but you like to feel like any, you know, youthful recklessness is going to have to be reined in a bit more, because now you've got your sweetie to think about.
Yeah, no, exactly. But that's why the books worked for so long, because it's identifiable. And that's why they've been so loath to let Spider-Man grow up, and I think that's why they did such a great job with the Spider-Man movies that we're seeing, because we're not getting Andrew Garfield going, I'm in high school. No, you're 35 years old.
Yeah, no, but you're not fooling.
You're not fooling anybody. But I think that's why it works, because it's this giant now balancing act with your, you know, apparitional mentor whispering in your ear saying that, you know, you have great power, you need to be responsible. What about your aunt? What about your education? Now what about your girlfriend?
Yes, exactly.
And you're just being torn apart, and it's not the guilt over losing your parents that's the thing that's driving you crazy. It's the guilt over making sure that everybody in your life, as you stack more and more on or more and more protected, that I think people really identify with.
Exactly. And it also, that dynamic gives, you know, it fleshes out the character in his civilian persona.
I love the idea that, you know, because we talked about Gwen during the Green Goblin episode.
Goblin up.
But I like the fact that they're quoted as saying that, you know, when they created Mary Jane, they kind of broke the mold, where they kept trying to make Gwen more and more attractive to the readers, but they really just screwed themselves with Mary Jane, because they almost made the perfect character, because they weren't trying to create this enduring love interest for Spider-Man and Mary Jane. They just wanted to have this character for fun that Spider-Man, you know, kind of like a Veronica, you know?
Yeah.
And they ended up making the perfect character, and they couldn't stop it, you know? And so they tried to create another one, and the behemoth that was Mary Jane just wouldn't let herself die.
They could not replace. I mean, in many ways, the Betty and Veronica analog is not far off the mark, except unlike over at Archie Comics, they couldn't make it work.
Right.
You couldn't have, like, Peter, you know, Steve Ditko couldn't do a cover with Spider-Man with his mask pulled up and two straws from his mouth going into two different milkshakes, one being, you know, like two girls, two milkshakes kind of thing going on. You know, that just wasn't going to happen, because
it would have been great if it did.
Yeah, but everybody loved Mary Jane. And in many ways, you get this sort of interloper unintentionally.
Yeah, who dis? Like, yeah, I agree.
And I'm not familiar enough with the narrative there, the storyline, to know exactly how Gwen insinuated herself into his life. But the really frightening thing is, if you analyze it, or overanalyze it, as the case may be, look at this dynamic, and you tell me what's going on, where Peter, I think, had their roles been reversed, he wouldn't have been nearly as crushed by Mary Jane's death as Gwen's.
Really?
I just have a feeling he loved her more, and it's not just her death that...
So you're telling me you think... save this for the overanalyzing comics issue, by
the
way. But you're telling me, if we package this up, you're telling me that you think that he took... If roles were reversed and Mary Jane was to be tossed from a bridge by the Green Goblin, and he ended up accidentally killing her, you think that he would have taken that with more aplomb than
I think we would not have suffered nearly as much.
Okay. All right. Okay. I'm putting that in my little notebook.
All right, please do, in case my brain.
All right.
And don't pull one of those things like you do, like, and what's the one thing you really wanted to talk about on this, and it's been like 7 months. I have no idea. You've got it written down in your little book.
That's my power. That's the power I like to hold over you sometimes.
You bastard.
All right, so I want to talk a little bit about the Spider-Verse and the families and just the... So my question for you is this.
Let's talk about one of the things we have brought into this family discussion is the work family.
I think
right up there with Clark Kent, Peter Parker's work family.
Thank you.
I mean,
thank you.
Ironically, if you're familiar, of course, which you are, if you're listening to this damn show, you know, they both work for great metropolitan newspapers, and the dynamic of family, because you have the boss, who is sort of the inevitable family. You can't avoid the fact that that's part of that family.
Sure.
But then you've got that sort of inner working. You don't have nearly as big a work family, but you had like Glory Grant and
Betty Brant. Glory Grant. Like, anybody who's named Rhyme just ended up in the Daily Bugle.
And then there was the editor there who was like befriended Peter and was sort of his champion.
Oh, what was his name?
Yeah, all of a sudden I'm like,
why are we doing this? Why are we cast right now? What is... This is bad. This is bad. Why can't I remember? Well, I mean, obviously you got Jameson. Jameson is not only, you know, bring me pictures of Spider-Man, but now also his brother, which is so fantastic. So fantastic. So that's a good one. Oh shit. Also, Thomas Fireheart, don't forget, was at one point his boss.
Ah,
the Puma. Say it.
It's not the Puma.
Thank you. Come on. Dig deep.
It's not the Puma.
Dig deep, man.
Or actually, like, you know, during, if Puma had been on the rampage during an Atlantean invasion.
Damn it. Yes? Please continue.
And like, you know, the Avengers are, like, in communication with each other, and so he's like, okay, I got him. And he's like, a Tuma? And that's not a Tuma. It's a Puma.
You're thinking of Ben Urk.
Okay. I didn't want to say it. For some reason, I was getting that confused with the lawyer from Daredevil.
Yes, yeah.
It's not Ben... lawyer, but I guess he was the reporter in Daredevil, so it could be the same guy.
It is the same guy. It is. But I think you're thinking of Ben Urk was his buddy, and definitely was a part of his life, along with, like, the list of people that were involved from the Daily Bugle in his life is long and storied, and every supervillain, this is like the Disney Channel leads to, you know, getting a record label. Everybody from Ned Leeds, who was Tom Goblin, to, you know, just Jessica Jones worked for them.
That's literally where it isn't, but it is. Everybody gets one.
Everybody gets one.
Tell him, Peter. Tell her, Peter. Everybody gets one.
It's true. It's true.
I mean, literally, like, everybody gets to be a superhero or a supervillain. If you're in this sphere of influence long enough.
If you look at enough pictures of Spider-Man.
Yeah. If you, like, hang around and, like, you pick on Spider-Man in high school, boom, you're Venom.
I want to know more about Jack Flash Gun Casey. I'm going to need to do some research into Jack Flash Gun Casey. He was a reporter, apparently, in the 40s.
Oh, okay.
I need to know more about...
And with a surfeit of names, apparently.
Flash Gun. Not hyphenated.
Oh.
Flash Gun.
Oh, so it's Flash Gun.
Flash Gun.
Was he a photographer?
I don't know, but I want to know. But yes, no, you're absolutely correct. I can't... I've lost the ability.
Correct is the word. Correct. C-R-E-C-H-T. Correct.
You are correct.
Correct. Correct.
That was his, you know, quarter, his one-third life that we all lead was the Daily Bugle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, working, Jameson was, for all intents and purposes, a major influence on his life. In the sense that his work ethic, I think a lot of his work ethic came from Jameson. You know,
yes.
I think Jameson was, you know, had that heart of gold deep down inside. Even as we talk about all the crap that he did for Spider-Man, he continued to let Peter work there. He wouldn't show up for work for days at a time. He would...
Yeah, very often he was, like, captive of a supervillain, but, you know.
But he kept coming back. You're right.
He would just tell Jameson some lie, and, you know, Jameson would buy it because journalists...
But he knew. Let's be real. He knew.
Well, I mean, you know, why is he the only photographer in the entire city who gets 375 shots of Spider-Man to choose from? Everybody else is bringing him, like, three. The paparazzi are everywhere.
Right, but that's all you're getting is the... It's a good point, man. It's a good point. Just,
you know, the smart money would be on following Parker.
Yeah, well, he's your friend. Why don't you bring me some pictures of Superman? Not, why isn't he your friend? Why is this happening?
You're in Spider-Man and cahoots because most of your pictures are very intimate.
Right.
Like, and none of them look like the sort of thing that, you know, I did notice that all the pictures that we didn't use were all from the exact same, like, we're using a tripod or something because...
And how did you get 13 stories up?
You know? How did you get to take this picture from the spire of the Empire State Building. Not just the observation deck. I'm talking like the blimp spire, the place where they were supposed to park Hindenburgs.
Right, at the very top.
Yeah.
Oh, man. All right, all right. So the bugle, yes, very much, yeah. Very much important. But then there's these family members that come out of the woodwork that seek out Spider-Man, and Spider-Man has been traditionally anti-sidekick. Like, he's not Wolverine, where Wolverine says that he's, I'm a lone wolf, I'm a pack of one, but I'm on every superhero team, and I have 17 sidekicks. But I work alone, but with 80 of you. Like,
that's right. But while I'm working with you, I'm working alone.
But the only ones but the only ones that Spider-Man lets into, I guess, his circle are people that need to be kind of taught how to be a spider person. So you have people like Arachna. Arachna who
Arachne?
Arachna, Spider Girl. Arana, Spider Girl.
Yeah, I think we're looking at Arachne. I hate to call you that. I'm going to be a little bit pedantic on this one, too.
But be pedantic. It's all fake.
Based on, I think Kelly Long would be upset with you for not pronouncing it correctly, so I'm trying to save your bacon here. I think the name is taken from the classical mythos.
So is she the one that wears the black costume? Is that her?
I've lost track, but I believe you're right, because she started out as Spider-Woman. Or the very first in the...
Julia Carpenter, Spider-Woman. Right, okay.
Yeah, because it was post... The first black costume Spider-Woman shows up in the Secret Wars. Or Secret Wars 2. I think she showed up in Secret Wars 2. And she was supposed to be from a chunk of Earth that made up the Secret Wars planet.
Right, yes, she was.
The chunk of Earth where nobody noticed you were a superhero until you finally revealed yourself because your chunk of Earth was on the Secret Wars planet.
Right. It just works out that way, right?
Yeah. I guess that's how that happens. It makes some... No. Not sense at all. None.
So she was a spider person given super secret spider formula based on Spider-Man, spider... it was one of those things. It was the Captain America effect where everybody was trying to come up with that infinity formula and created a bunch of weirdness out of it. But she teams up. She was also in my favorite Marvel comic book, Cole, which we just talked about the other day.
Oh.
And the fact that I want Marvel Legends based on this team, which was...
What was the name of that team?
Forceworks.
Forceworks.
Forceworks. So good. So perfect. If you can get me Forceworks... Marvel Legends, and I know that there's like an already existing War Machine and an already existing, I get it, but I want as Forceworks, like just blown way out of proportion as Forceworks. That's what I want.
Maybe Walgreens will pick it up after they tap out Fantastic Four.
Maybe, I doubt it, but maybe. But then there's also Spider-Girl, who dons the black costume after kind of a similar experience where the Spider Society gives her her powers, and she seeks out Spider-Man and becomes basically Spider-Man's sidekick for a while.
So there's a Spider Society as well as a Serpent Society.
Yes. Oh, they're very much so. Yeah.
Are there any other societies in Marvel?
Oh, there's a Stingray Society. There's a Sparrow Society. And it's all S. It's all animals that have S's in their name.
Chinch Bug Society.
That's right. Stag Beetle Society.
That's right.
But then you've got characters like Silk and
Venus Handbasket Sponge Society
and Spider Girl. Silk's is really interesting because the way I don't know why they decided this was necessary, but Silk was bit right after Spider-Man. Like, literally...
Is she like the Supergirl of Spider-Man? Yes. That she arrives seconds decades later?
Spider-Man! By the same damn spider! No, another spider. No, it's the same spider on the same day. Same spider on the same day, Cole.
the love of God.
And then she was...
So she's like a late bloomer or something? Or?
Well, no, she was caught and imprisoned.
Oh, of course.
By Moreland.
She was.
You remember, or I guess by Ezekiel, which was a member of the, like, the Moreland spider family that led to the Spider-Verse. But this was way back in the Wayback Machine. She was supposedly captured on the same time and captured. So she was...
Now, the thing about it is, I would be willing to allow for this.
No.
If, and only if... Stan Lee and Steve Ditko had, within the context of the original Spider-Man tales, had, because I believe Silk is Cindy Moon is the character.
Correct.
If there had been a Cindy Moon in Parker's class. I'm sure back then, you know, no other schoolmates got fleshed out by name other than Mary Jane and Flash Thompson.
Right.
And maybe a couple others. But if you're going to retrofit, do it right. Go back and find out who the hell else was on that damn field trip. I guarantee you there wasn't no Cindy Moon there.
Right. But they decided there was. So yeah. There you go. And probably my favorite and most interesting Spider-Man.
Upcoming issue, the Retcon Game, by the way, will cover Cindy Moon, amongst others.
Well, are alternate versions of yourself family?
I guess they kind of have to be, in the same way that Shudder, Ben Reilly.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. Is Ben...
Well, that's not just like an alternate, because an alternate version of yourself is like, you know, somebody comes over from Thundar the Barbarian world, and they're you with a beard or some shit.
Right.
But, you know, clones are, I guess, technically as family as it gets.
Sure.
Because that's even more than like having a sibling. Because by its very nature, nature demands variations on a theme. That's why those of us who have siblings are so wildly different from our siblings. Where in the case of cloning, you know, the clone of Peter Parker is like 99.999999999999% of Peter Parker.
Right.
I mean, there is just the slightest bit of genetic drift there. So it's kind of a weird, creepy way of expanding the family, as it were.
Okay. So I guess all of the Spider-Verse characters, including Punk Rock Spider-Man, Spider-Ham, I'll call it. I'm calling it now. The six-armed Spider-Man. Spider-Monkey, the Spider-Man Noir,
Spider-Monkey?
Mm-hmm.
Spider-Monkey.
Think Hit-Monkey.
I was going to say, isn't Spider-Monkey just sort of Hit-Monkey's relative? From a different litter?
Yeah, pretty much.
Are they litters with monkeys? I don't know. I should know this. I'm much more versed in the natural world than that.
Think that. And then think, you know, but I think one of them that really stands out for me that I want to talk about, we need to start wrapping this up. I think we've gone long. I haven't been paying attention. is Mayday Parker, who I think is a really interesting character, given that we're never – so you're faced with a conundrum. And that conundrum is we've got a Peter Pan syndrome superhero that sells a lot of books based on the fact that he's a Peter Pan syndrome-based character. And by that, I mean, you know, we don't want Spider-Man to grow up.
Yeah, it's detrimental. When Spider-Man goes off to college and gets married and teaches at university...
Right.
He is no longer... I mean, depending on your age, he's no longer you. And then they have to go off and create the Ultimates so that the youngsters will have something.
So how do you combat that? The fact that he's never going to – that he's probably in the main continuity of the Spider universe, right? And I that he's never going to be able to have a child to foster to adulthood. You create an alternate reality Peter Parker where he marries Mary Jane and he has a kid. And that kid's name is Mayday Parker. Mayday Parker has a really interesting – story, a fairly long tenure at this point.
Well, oddly enough, in the continuity, Mayday is not named after Aunt May.
Right.
as you'd think, she's actually named after Grace Jones in A View to a Kill. God and it's it. The damnedest.
God damn it. God damn it.
It's Peter Parker. In that universe, that's his favorite movie, and Mary Jane movie. Just kind of conceded.
It's everyone's favorite movie. Mayday's a really popular name in that universe.
Yeah, the surprise. It's like Jim.
But she got her powers. You know, Spider-Man had since retired in that universe from a knockdown drag-out with, you know, career-ending fight on both sides with Norman Osborn. And at the end of the day there, you know, she becomes the spider person of that universe. But then she crosses over into the 616 fairly regularly and is, you know, and meets Peter. It's, you know, it's weird for Peter, but Peter's able to foster her, much like the Ultimate Spider-Man, right? Much like Miles Morales is now in the... And I think it's really cool that they've introduced Miles Morales in the main continuity, and he's not Robin.
Exactly. He's not the... He's his own thing.
He's part of
he's
it.
He's not... he's not part of it. He's his own thing.
He's his own thing. Yeah. Right. So,
because with Spider-Man, there you don't need Beat Boy skeletons.
Do you? Don't you, though? I think that it might make Spider-Man a little better if he had him. I'm not saying it would add that much, but at one point, God, we're within a month from what has to be another.
Oh, well, you've got you could have Beat Boy spiders, and they could have that kind of weird, like, where you attach the extra arms by wire.
Yeah.
So the actor's action arms, you know, like in H.R. Puff and stuff.
Well, I think we're like less than a month away from another David S. Pumpkins is what I just got something sidetracked in my own brain.
Yeah.
I'm very excited for that.
Well, we're also less than a month away from, or about a month away from our third Halloween special.
Yeah.
And we've got something, a lot of fun in the works for that.
Right.
Since the advent of the Halloween special, it's kind of allowed us to challenge ourselves with coming up with new ways to celebrate Halloween.
Also, and I just wanted to close, you know, as far as the main content of the show, on Norman Osborn. Go back and listen to our Norman Osborn issue, which was about, what, 10 ago, maybe now?
Yeah.
But it says everything we want to say here, besides the fact that I think he falls definitely into the crazy uncle. It doesn't get crazier than Norman Osborn. And for more on that, go listen to that show, because we don't have another hour and a half to spend talking about how nuts Norman Osborn is. Cole, so do you have any final thoughts on Spider-Man here as we wrap it up?
Well, I think the thing that strikes me most is you have this dynamic now with Spider-Man where his family is actually the youngest of all families we're going to talk about in this arc. Technically speaking, his family grew exponentially in the last handful of years.
Right, right.
Where everybody else's has been around by and large to a great many years or decades. He just like got this boom of like, here's a ton of new family. You know, Batman, you could say the same, like, well, you know, Batman Incorporated kind of flooded the Bat family, but the Bat family is that was just like the latest refresh of a glass that's been overflowing forever.
Right.
And you know, I think that that's one of the kind of my parting thought there is that you've got this character who just like out of the blue has, relatively speaking, has this gigantic family.
Yeah, and we didn't even get into like all the Spider-Verse and like, you know, the Renew Your Vows stuff and all of that. We were trying to keep it pretty close to the hilt because, again, we have an hour. And there's so much to talk about. So much to talk about.
Well, the nice thing is we are constantly revisiting a lot of our topics.
Right.
Over a great many years and that we've been doing this and we'll, you know, we've got this thing. I can run this show into the 2021 nonstop at this point.
Right. We've got it scheduled out. So, all right. Well, let's close it out. Next week, we close out this story arc. We close it out big and we close it out wholesome ladies and gentlemen.
Yes, indeed. And not only were we closing out big and wholesome.
That's what they call kind of Sing Sing.
That's right. Is because you're like the Wonder Bread of prisoners. We had, because that's what they called B was Wonder Bread. We have the oldest family.
Yeah, yeah. And the most established. Going
from the newest, yeah, from the newest family to the oldest family, because this was a family that existed almost from the outset.
And that's the thing, is we talk about Batman, and we talk about Spider-Man, and we talk about, but this family is established.
And we talked about what we talk about when we talk about Daredevil.
And that's just an established, yeah. By the way, Iron Fist 2, fantastic.
I have seen the first episode of Iron Fist 2.
Wait till episode 4. I'm going to goddamn, I didn't think they were going to be, I didn't think that they could make a character as ominous as Typhoid Mary is in this season of Iron Fist, but holy shit. Like,
well, you know,
horrifying.
I've seen the first episode where they introduced the, without really, I mean, unless you already knew, I didn't make the connection until the what the hell's going on here, nutty kind of breakdown scene.
Uh-huh. Just wait for
it. And then my brain was like, Catherine's like, well, what was that all about? And I'm thinking, yeah, what was it? Wait a minute. And I remembered that she was going to be the villain. I said, well, here's where I'm going to benefit from not knowing anything about a comic book character. I can't be disappointed if the character is vastly different from the comics. I'm aware of Typhoid Mary, and that's where my knowledge ends. Except that apparently in the action figure, she's got a flaming sword. That's about all I know.
Well, and they aren't going to go superhero over the top with her, I don't think.
Yeah, but, I don't imagine that would work.
But, holy shit, man. Like David Tennant, like, what was the guy?
David S. Tennant.
David S. Tennant. What was the guy from last season of Luke Cage that was just like, Bushmaster?
Bushmaster.
Like, shit, man. Like, why can't you make your movie villains anywhere near as ominous as these?
I know.
Villains?
They're I guess they've got more time to make them ominous, but still. I mean, jeez.
Oh, my God. All right. Plug this up and we'll get out of here. We'll have a whole issue on it.
That's right. We're coming to you, of course, from the Jedi Cole universe at JediCole.com. This is, you can write to JCMail at Yahoo.com, JediCole.com, and I think I may have said JediColeUniverse.com or something like that. But go to JediCole.com. You can see all the stuff. Google Hey Kids Comics Back Issue Bin if you want to check out the over 250 issues of this show. And good God, we're getting closer. I got to crack open that copy of 300 I bought because we're coming up to our 300th issue. And, you know, naturally we're going to do Harvey Tunes.
Oh, yeah.
We're going
to do a little hot.
Yeah, a little hot stuff. That's
a little
right.
Hot.
So, and be sure, to, if you like my work here, check me out over on the DallasOnAir.com, the first and third Sundays of every month for Isle of Toys. For the Rancor Pit Live, the first and third Sundays of every month. Good, I got too damn many shows. The third Sunday of every month is Isle of Toys, AILSE of Toys, my new show that's just about a year old now. The Rancor Pit Live is 4 or 5 years old now, which is insane. We've had over 100 episodes. And that's Rancor Pit Live is 10:30 to 11:30 a.m. Central on DallasOnAir.com, first and third Sundays of every month. Isle of Toys, the third Sunday of every month from 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. Central.
There you go. And you can find us on social media at HK Comic Show across the board, or at JasonMimosa.com, which we now have a lovely...
Jason Mimosa's at my mom's today.
We now have a picture to go up on that website, so that's great. all right, join us next week when we talk about what we talk about when we talk about just awesome, wholesome family wizards.
And the thing is, this couldn't have been timed better because this is a character whose family, who the character and their family are going to get their due cinematically here early part of next year.
All right, yeah. So buy, collect, enjoy your comics. I'm just beat down. Buy, collect, and enjoy your comics, and we'll be back next week with more Hakan
Comics.
Do stuff. Say goodnight, Cole.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.